Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This week on Catch and Shoot 2.0, what can we make of the two games the Suns and the Warriors played against each other last week? What the heck is going on with the Blazers? Is it time to blow things up in Portland? Plus, don't tell anybody, but the defending champs are playing some pretty good ball right now. We check in on the Milwaukee Bucks with someone who has followed them since he first was able to bounce the ball. But first, Darlene, get us started.
Catch and Shoot 2.0 is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. Catch and Shoot 2.0 goes well with both red and white and is perfect with the workout of your choice. Our hosts are Aaron Berlin, a former Kansas Jayhawk who believes the Orlando Magic will win the championship. Eventually. His partner is Otto Strong, a man who has covered the NBA since before Dennis Rodman got his first tattoo. Fellas?
Welcome to Catch and Shoot 2.0. I am Otto Strong, along with my partner filling in for Aaron Berlin, our CCO, executive producer, Bruce Bernstein. Bruce, how's it going?
Hi, Otto. Always a pleasure to be with you. Hopefully Aaron will return next week after being under the weather, but thank you for having me.
Oh, please. You're the guy who makes the show go around, right? So a pleasure to have. Hey, so, you know, we're at that interesting time of year where in the NBA calendar where, you know, we're looking with some anticipation into Christmas Day games. We're past the quarter pole. And, you know, we're coming off of a recent stretch where we had two really good games, high-profile matchups, Suns and Warriors. They both, you know, split their games, both won on their home floor. Do we learn anything from those two games? You know, the teams are now 20-4.
I think what we've learned is that at age 33, Stephen Curry is really playing some of the best all-around basketball of his career. He's averaging just under 28, 5.6 boards, 6.5 assists. His excellence has become routine, and that's why guys like him go to the Hall of Fame. But, you know, a couple other guys I think have really stepped up a lot for them. I mean, Andrew Wiggins is finally kind of hitting his stride, averaging almost 19 a game. And Jordan Poole from the University of Michigan, averaging almost 18. So they're going to have an interesting situation with Poole when Klay Thompson comes back, because Jordan Poole will probably become the sixth man and, you know, bravo. And, you know, but the Warriors team is leading the NBA in a bunch of team stats. Here's a few. I'm not going to go heavy on this, but point differential. They're outscoring their opponents by 13 points a game. Every game, okay? Yeah. Rebound differential, they're leading the league, plus 5.5. Assists differential, so they're moving the ball much better than their opponents are, 7.3 more assists per game than their opponents. And their opponents' field goal percentage, which I've been told by a number of coaches, is the most important defensive stat. Opponents' field goal percentage, just over 42%. So, Otto, this team can score points, but with Draymond Green kind of running the defense, they are the top defensive team in the NBA, which is pretty remarkable.
It's fun to see a team that's, you know, not just relying. I mean, obviously they can light it up and you know, fill the cup up as it were, but it's also nice to see them be able to kind of, you know, go that other way and lock down folks if they have to. And I mean, a team like that, I just don't know, you know, if we're projecting it all the way out, who's going to beat them 4 out of 7. I mean, that's basically what I said when the season started. You know, with the anticipation of Klay coming back, I will be first to say, you know, I'll say this, that I did not think that they would be doing, you know, this well without Klay. But, you know, hey, that's why they play the games, right?
Well, I think one team that could beat them in a 4 out of 7 series is the team that you mentioned along with them at the top of the show, the Phoenix Suns. They are going to be playing each other again on Christmas. So we'll see, you know, that'll be kind of like the rubber game, I guess, in the trilogy this year. But here's a couple numbers on the Suns that I think are really interesting. They have 9 players averaging 9 points per game or more. 9 players averaging more than 9 points a game. And I think 6 of them are averaging double figures, okay? So that's a team that is balanced. It's deep. They can play aggressive because if they get in foul trouble, they got guys coming off the bench that are legitimate, you know, scoring threats and good two-way players. But JaVale McGee is a name you don't really hear too much. Now, JaVale McGee and DeAndre Ayton, who you do hear a lot about, their combined numbers per game, okay, because they're basically splitting the minutes. If you look at the stat sheets, between the two of them, they got the 48 minutes covered at center, okay?
Right.
Between the two of them, they are averaging 26 points and 18 rebounds a game, okay? And both of them are significant presence in the lane on defense. So again, they've got a good backline defense. They've got good perimeter guys. They've got probably the best floor general in the NBA right now with Chris Paul, who, you know, as Greg Anthony told me many, many years ago, he's there. Chris Paul, he gets what gotta get got. And that's how Chris Paul is. Whatever the team needs, he gets it for him. So I would say, I would give Phoenix actually a slight edge on Golden State looking down the road. But again, Clay hasn't played yet and they're 20-4. So your point is extremely well taken about when he comes back, are we back to the 2017 Warriors all over again?
Right, and I will concede that yes, that, you know, so there is a team out there. I mean, I obviously wear the Phoenix Suns, but you know, until just I don't know until it happens, till the team can you know in that kind of matchup. But hey, you're right. You know, I mean those two seems like they're destined for a deep series. Hopefully, it'll be a Western Conference series and. And you know we'll go from there.
I want to. I did have one more thing I wanted to add.
Oh, sure.
You mentioned Draymond Green. Okay. Yeah. I want Aerosmith to do a remake of Dream On, and I want it to be Draymond. Okay, sorry.
Only you know that was Sarah. So if we're gonna go down that road, now I find it especially touching that you were gonna you know tap a Boston band to create a cheer song essentially for the Golden State Warriors, a team that, you know, a few years ago could have been a finals matchup. Last year
I wanted the Beach Boys to do a version of Barbara Ann for Ja Morant. You know, Ja Morant. So I have these really like twisted sicko thoughts in my head about music and basketball, and they mean absolutely nothing other than I shouldn't eat anchovies so late at night.
That's good stuff. So as we look around the league and kind of canvas, because we're gonna be talking with Rob Peterson about the Milwaukee Bucks, so we're gonna get to them in a moment. But so, you know, you're an Eastern Conference guy, you're a Celtics guy, but you're always looking at the standings and you know, the Knicks are a team that, you know, you've got this love, hate, more hate relationship with a lot of hate, which I totally get that. I have a lot of hate with them at times, you know, as a lot of Knicks fans have over the years. But they've lost 3 in a row, 4 of their last 5. And the, you know, there's starting to be some questions with regard to the team's identity. Team has removed Kemba Walker from the rotation, and the defense, which has really been a strength, has not exactly been kind of as you know that presence that we were that us Knicks fans were liking to see last year. So what do you make of what's going on with them?
Well, as we know, they took Kemba Walker out of the rotation recently. Okay. So if you want to talk about, you know, why their defense has taken a step backwards this year, the two guys that were on the Celtics last year that are on the Knicks this year, Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier, neither one of them is really very good on defense. So I think when you have 40% of your lineup, again, before Kemba was removed from the rotation, you're bound to be worse defensively. You know, Julius Randle has been fairly consistent this year. He's averaging 20 and 10 and 5.3 assists. But I was looking through their game results this year, and he seems to score better in the games they lose than in the games they win. So again, that might mean absolutely nothing because it's fairly close. I mean, he averages about 21 in their losses and he averages about 19 in their wins. So it's not a huge difference, but I'm just, you know, I don't know. Some, you know, it seems to me that he should be scoring better in their wins than in their losses. So I don't know what that means, but one of the things that, you know, their point differential, they're 20th in the league right now. So, and they're, you know, they're not a great rebounding team either. I mean, they get rebounded, you know, most nights. So, you know, I think they play hard. RJ Barrett was out. He's back. You know, it's too soon to throw dirt on the Knicks for this season. They still have time to get it together. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure Knicks fans were hoping for much more than an 11-12 record after 23 games.
Well, you know, rebounding the ball has always been a you know, I'm one of those Oakley guys going all the way back in Mace, and you know, those were always the, you know, the blue collar mentality, you know, getting in there working for your opportunities. And so if you're not doing that, I mean, you're basically you're just shooting yourself in the foot. I mean, there's no other way to put it.
Well, when you're not a good rebounding team, that also makes you not necessarily a great defensive team, because every defensive possession has to end with you controlling the defensive rebound. And if you don't, that is definitely, you know, I mean, that's something the Celtics have struggled with for years and years, you know? So yeah, unless you're going to secure those defensive rebounds, you can play 23 seconds of great defense and then, you know, piss it away by giving the other team 14 more to shoot and then they get a bucket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yeah, that's a frustrating situation that we could talk a lot more about. Let's swing back over to we're gonna hop the plane and go back across country one more time. So everyone gets a lot of frequent flyer miles this week. I guess that's how we're doing it. But so Portland, the Trailblazers, it seems like it's just kind of a mess going on out there. Neil O'Shea has been let go. The team has been struggling. Chauncey Billups, new head coach, has already called out the team for their effort and attitude. I mean, you know, this team starts and stops as it always has. You know, in the last, I guess, 10 years with Dame Lillard. You know, is he happy? Is he going to stay? Is he not stay? You know, what's going on there? So, it feels like this just, how much more can this guy take? I mean, this, you know, if you were on any other team, it seems like he would have been in the finals or at least, you know, conference finals multiple times, if not the finals, you know, at least once. It would seem like that to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with moving Dame Lillard is that, you know, Portland's going to want a boatload of everything for him. And, you know, Dame Lillard is, if he's traded, needs to go to a team that has a chance to win. And what happens there is, if for a team that has a chance to win, are they really going to want to trade like maybe their two best players and a number one draft pick for Dame? I mean, that almost, you know, seems like a step backwards as great as Dame is. But I feel kind of bad for Chauncey because, you know, obviously you and I both knew him at ESPN. We were very fond of him as a human being. He's a great guy. I think he will be a great coach. But it's a mess there because, all right, he's a rookie coach. The guy who hired him just got fired. All right. The ownership of that team, for years it was Paul Allen, the Microsoft gazillionaire. His sister, Jody, is the governor now. But from what I've read, she doesn't really take a very much of a hands-on approach. So it's almost like, you know, Chauncey's at the wheel of a rudderless ship right now. And it's in some pretty choppy waters. And, you know, they don't really look like a playoff team right now. And in Portland, they're always expecting to be a playoff team.
No, they are. But at this, I mean, I'm just thinking about more than anything else, more than Chauncey, because like you said, I think Chauncey will, you know, have his opportunities. Other seasons will, you know, to show what he can actually, you know, what he can really do with an organization that's kind of all moving in the same direction, as opposed to, you know, having these internal struggles. But Dame, I mean, I feel for the guy because, I mean, he's one of those elite talents who, you know, I feel like NBA fans are being robbed by not having a chance to see what he can do on the game's biggest stage. And I get, you know, certainly get the business of the game. And I mean, I was looking for a handout, but at the same time, like, I mean, yeah, it's a tough one to solve. And I just don't know how that one's going to get solved in a way that's going to leave both sides feeling somewhat decent about it.
All right, so Portland's kind of down, but Milwaukee lately has been way, way up. And here to discuss the defending champions, our pal Rob Peterson, the NBA editor for The Athletic. The Milwaukee Bucks got off to a slow start this season, but they've been playing much better of late. The defending champs have won 10 of their last 11, and as we tape this show on Tuesday evening, they're third place in the Eastern Conference standings. To talk more about the Bucks and some of the other news going around the league, we bring in my neighbor, my friend, my former colleague at ESPN, and Otto's former colleague at ESPN, the one and only Rob Peterson, senior editor with The Athletic. Hey, Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here. It's good to see you guys, and I love the stuff that you guys do. So thanks for having me on. Really
Not at all.
It.
Let's start, you know, when last we spoke, you were in the process of jinxing Giannis Antetokounmpo in the finals.
That is correct.
As you came on the show, and in the next game, he hyperextended his knee and sat out a game, and the sky was falling on Milwaukee.
I think I mentioned to you in passing that I might never do a Pro Hoops Media podcast again because of that. But it all turned out great in the end, so I'm back. Thank you for having me. But yeah, I don't want to be Bucks cooler. That would be bad. I don't want the city of Milwaukee against me. I love my people back there. So, I think we'll be okay this time, but it was weird. It was just, you know, you're watching that game 4, and then all of a sudden he goes down in a heap and you're like, oh my God, this is the end. This is the Wisconsin sports jinx that we've talked about for years. So, and I've written about actually on The Athletic, is like how close Wisconsin sports teams have come to, winning championships with the occasional Packers title. But yeah, it was weird. And then lo and behold, he came back and his performance in the finals was one of the best.
Well, luckily for him, he was able to overcome the jinx of Rob Peterson.
Yes.
and come out and lead the Bucks to their first championship in 50. You know, the SI jinx is dead, but the Rob Peterson jinx, that might still be a thing. Although, like I said, the Greek freak overcame it. Yeah. But now he's back and he's balling like he always is. And yep. He scored 27 in 27 minutes on Monday, and he went over the Cavs. He'd missed the previous couple games due to soreness in his right calf. So the word on Giannis after the game on his injury, is the team kind of concerned, or are they feeling like this guy is going to be fine?
I think one of the things they have this year is there's a calmness. They're playing. It feels like they're playing with house money in the sense that they've won a title. They don't have to burn through the NBA in a regular season to prove to everybody that they're a great team. They know they're a great team. They've proven they're a great team. Yes, you'll get some people who's like, oh, they won an injury title. I'm like, any title is going to have its share of injuries and luck and bounces. Just ask the Raptors when Kawhi hits the rim four times. It's like, you're going to have that. So I think this year with Giannis and Bud and the philosophy behind it is that they don't have to rush these guys back. So last night, Giannis scored 27 in 20 minutes. Bud said he wanted Giannis wanted to play longer. He was going to let him because he's coming off the calf twinge. And, you know, it's like, they don't need to push Giannis 38. They don't need to push these guys 35 minutes a game. One of the reasons being is that they have a familiarity and a comfortability with each other, Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday. And they're getting contributions from guys like Pat Connaughton and Bobby Portis. And, you know, they're guys that usually are on the bench are providing starters minutes. Grayson Allen, who has been a nice surprise coming over from Memphis. So there seems to be a level of calm. There's no rushing. There's no stress. I mean, there's stress obviously, but it doesn't seem in the past they haven't won a title before. Can they win a title? Then before that, it was, will Giannis stay? Will he sign the extension? We got to keep him. We got to win so we can keep him. And there's none of that this year. You know, there's concern about injuries. You don't want to get anybody hurt, But if you follow Bucks Twitter, you read Eric Name on The Athletic, you just know that these guys are working towards something greater than blasting the Cavs by 50. They won by 8 last night, I believe, but blasting a team by 50 during the regular season, that serves them no purpose right now.
Hey, Rob, so you mentioned Chris coming back. You mentioned Jrue Holiday coming back. So just, I don't think we said this specifically, but just to put it out there, so Giannis, mm-hmm. Chris, and Jrue are undefeated when they're in the lineup together. And they definitely have this air about them where, like so many elite teams, it's just about being right for April. Mm-hmm. And in addition to, Pat Connaughton and other contributors, are there other factors that play kind of behind the scenes that we may not be aware of?
I think one of the things that you're looking at with the Bucks now is that they've made some good moves in the offseason to augment the losses. I mean, PJ Tucker was an integral part to the championship last season, and they had his bird rights and they could have signed him to a long-term contract, but he's 36. And so what do they do? They build around the edges in a different way. They just picked up Wes Matthews, somebody who they're familiar with in their system. He was with them in 20, George Hill. They signed Boogie Cousins, who, think of it this way, if Boogie can just give him 20 minutes a night, he's an all-star caliber center. Yes, he's had a lot of injuries, but he fits great. He can pass the ball. That's what this offense is. Yeah, yes, you can get Giannis going downhill. Yes, you can get Chris isolating on a smaller guard. And yes, you can get Jrue breaking somebody off the dribble. But right. When you have everybody else, you're finding spots. They're finding spots in the dunker spot. They're finding guys in the corner. They're finding guys open in the corner. And that just gives them another dimension. And so I think one of the things you have now with the Bucks is they're not just Giannis. When he tried to break through that wall in 2019 with Toronto, when they had the struggles in the bubble in 2020, they've figured out ways to beat you where it's just not one guy or one method. So, and I think that's credited, but they said he couldn't make adjustments, and he's made a ton of adjustments. It's not, you can't build a wall against him anymore. And if you do, Giannis recognizes it. And he's like, I know this guy's over here. I know this guy's in the corner. I know this guy will be cutting. I know this guy will be behind me. So it's that level of familiarity and comfortability that they have with each other, with the offense, with their coach. They can make adjustments on the fly. So they look like they've been there before. And when you have and I think that's, one of the Suns things is that, yeah, they didn't win the finals last year, but they're playing like they've been there before. You know what I mean? In terms of this works and we're going to keep it working. So, and I think that's what the Bucks have figured out. They know what works, and they're going to continue to do that and improve upon it.
So normally the defending champs would be getting all kinds of attention put on them, in the first season after they won it, as they work to defend. But most of the talk this year has kind of been on the Warriors and the Suns, both 20-4 at the time we taped this thing, not to mention the really nice start by the Chicago Bulls. The Lakers kind of stumbling out of the gate a little bit. Kyrie and his vaccination kerfuffle, all that stuff. So meanwhile, Milwaukee's quietly getting their act together. They've overcame having Chris Middleton out. That was a huge loss for them. And when he returned, the team was almost transformed immediately. So they're going about their business. They're winning games, but they're basically operating kind of under the radar. Is this the type of team that prefers to be operating under the radar, not necessarily looking for all the attention or scrutiny?
It seems like it. It seems like they have a little bit of a Midwest vibe. Now, for anybody who hasn't lived there, I live there. I grew up in Milwaukee, and then I moved out to the East Coast in 1999. So I've had the hustle and bustle of New York, and I've had the laid back upbringing that in Milwaukee. And I think one of the things they like in Milwaukee is that it's like, we're just getting our job done. And I'm not saying that you don't, in other cities, you don't like to get the job done. But it's like, just let me do what I need to do and let me do it. They just want to play ball. I don't think they're worried about the drama, the mess. There are going to be some teams that, the Warriors, they've been down the past couple of years. Now Steph is going supernova again. And Kyrie, and Clay is going to come back. And then, You know, you have the Suns who didn't were close last year and now they're back. So you're doing the work and getting the job done when you've already won a championship is not necessarily an exciting thing. You know, there's nothing the Bucks are doing right now that are going to grab headlines. Right. They're third in the East. Yeah, they've won 9 of their last 10, but they're just working. So when you have the storylines from the other teams, that's new and shiny and exciting and different. The Bucks being good and winning is not that much different than what they've been doing in the past.
Exactly, Rob. So here's the question. You know, the spotlight is shining elsewhere, and it's like, as you say, allowing the Bucks to do what they do. The one thing, I guess, if we're you know, those media types, those pesky media types, yeah, looking for that thing, you could say Giannis created a bit of a stir a couple of weeks ago when, in an interview with GQ, he mentioned that the future challenges to his NBA career might not be in Milwaukee. So my question is, does that make Milwaukee Deer District or Fear District?
I still think it's Deer District. I still think it's Deer District. And I think one of the things with Giannis is that he's pretty savvy and he knows what he's talking about. Yeah, it's weird when you, it's not weird, but it's endearing when he goes, I've never tried Oreos and milk before, you know. But the other thing is, like, if he's just coasting along happy all the time, it's like, then he has no leverage. He needs, you know, there's that push and pull between the players and management. And if he wants leverage, he's kind of has to, like, keep his options open. Not that he's going anywhere anytime soon, but, you know, we've seen situations in the past where it's just kind of exploded on people and on franchises. I don't think it's going to happen here. He seems to like Milwaukee. You know, it's where he started his journey in the NBA. Yeah, that might have been a little twinge of drama, but it's kind of past. People haven't really, like, oh my God, if we don't win this year, Giannis might leave in two. I haven't seen that. I think people are focusing on the season and getting wins there and positioning themselves for the playoffs and staying healthy. So, but yeah, I don't think that's gonna affect them going forward in the next year or two.
There was a time when somebody like Giannis would, not necessarily Giannis, but a superstar player in a so-called smaller market would want to try and get out of that market because there would be more opportunities to earn off the court money, advertising, you know, endorsements, things like that. But that's not really the case anymore. I mean, you know, you can be in Portland and be Dame Lillard and you're doing Hulu TV ads. You can be Giannis, right. You can be all kinds of people. So really that actually works in the franchise's favor. And, you know, Giannis also, like, as you said, seems to really enjoy the whole Milwaukee scene. So you early in this discussion, you mentioned Eric Name, your colleague who you work with closely at The Athletic. You are one of his editors, or you might be his editor, his personal editor. You're like his.
Yes.
You're like,
we work together.
I'm like Timba Carver to Steve Walton, you know, Steve Carlton. Anyway, mixing sports here. Anyway, so Eric had a really interesting piece on Giannis a couple of weeks ago. He focused on how his game has sort of evolved. Coaching staff has asked him to sort of slow down and take a picture of the plays in front of him. And he seems to have further learned how he can affect the game without scoring. Do you see, like, you know, concrete signs of that evolution? And what does that look like?
Yeah, it looks like role players having big years. That's what it looks like. I think in the sense of, you know, Grayson Allen finding himself open on threes. I was listening to something the other day, and it's like Grayson Allen's catch and shoot threes went from 60 to 72% or something like that because of the Giannis factor. Pat Connaughton is open. Bobby Portis is open, whether it be on the three-point line or in the dunker spot underneath the hoop on either block. He and Chris work pick and roll pretty well. Chris finds him on entry passes. So, you know, Giannis was full speed. He was just, you know, and then he was the battering ram. And then the Raptors set up the wall in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2019, and it became frustrating. And then 2020 fell apart in the bubble. And last year, when they needed him to be Superman and score 50 in a game, he could. But there are also times where, you know, he was playing, he had that block on Ayton, you know, where he forces Booker to throw the lob and then pirouettes and just rises 11 feet in the air and blocks Ayton. So he takes the guard, takes the center, not a problem. But the thing with him is that he's learning. Like we mentioned, he has a lot of hardware. He's going to get more. And the reason he's going to get more is because he's going to become a complete player. If he isn't already, he's going to become a more complete player in the sense of, you know, being able to dish, being able to board. He can already lead a one-man fast break. It's just to see his evolution from the kid he was when he was drafted to where he is now. I don't know. He was not anointed. He is one of the best players, if not the best player in the NBA right now. So just because of the many things that he can do.
You mentioned that that block on Ayton in the finals, and it just feels like, I mean, I don't know what the NBA finals montage leading into the, you know, you never underestimate
the heart of a champion.
Right, right. So it just feels like that block is going to find its way into the montage of great moments in NBA Finals histories over the years. Yep. Because it was just how iconic it was. So, you know, speaking of run to the title, you know, if we kind of rewind just a little bit more, a few clicks back in the season, there were those pundits who, and even Bucks fans who were ready to, you know, fire Mike Budenholzer. You know, every loss, it was like, yeah, let's get Mike out of here. Do you feel now with the title and it's, you know, the validation, if you will, that there's that he's approaching this a little differently, that he's a loser and has just, you know, you mentioned playing, you know, the team playing with house money to a degree. Do you feel like he's coach is also in that same lane?
Yeah, he got the extension this offseason, so that's good. But I think he's learning too. You know, the knock on him was that he was unable to adjust and he was not able to, you know, have Giannis break through that wall. But, you know, they added instead of having four shooters out on Giannis, last year they put what they call a dunker spot. And so it's an area on the baseline near the rim. And so instead of having four guys out and people being able to build the wall, somebody has to guard that guy on the baseline, which gives the Bucks that many more options on a play. Do they run that all the time? No, but you'll see, if you watch a Bucks game, you'll see guys cutting along the baseline that Giannis or Chris or Drew can find. So by doing that, Coach Bud opened up the offense and gave his guys that many more options. And getting Drew is a big one too. They didn't have him for 2019 and 2020, and just the strength in that guy. It's like he's 6'3", but he'd be a great linebacker or a strong safety. The strength that he has, just muscle guy, big guys. Like he would just, you know, he can back guys down and then step back and hit in your face. He can distribute. He can rebound. He can run. He's added another dimension that Eric Bledsoe, who's now at the Clippers, wasn't able to add, because Drew, while not an exceptional lights out shooter, can make his shots. And it seems like he's ambidextrous near the rim. So Bud has been able to use all of those guys and build on their strengths to make sure that there's not just one way to stop the Bucks. If you're a defense.
Hey Rob, at the top of the segment, you mentioned, you know, because we hadn't spoken in a I guess a couple months, but you talked about you know, the injury and the jinx and all that, and obviously now they've been to the mountaintop, won the title. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of wondering on a personal level, and look, we all know we're all journalists here, and for those listening, you know, you can be fair and you can also be a fan. It is possible. Yeah. But having said that, was there a moment where, because of your unique position at the athletic, either that night or you know, days later or weeks later, that something cool happened with respect to the title, and, you know, what it meant to you personally or professionally, or however that might have worked out?
Well, before I came to ESPN, I worked for NBA Entertainment. So real quick, I worked for the Bucks from 90 to 94 in the video department, and I would chart shots, and I charted shots for some of the worst Bucks teams in their history. So that wasn't good. There's a gentleman who his name is Anthony Poulard, P-U-L-L-A-R-D. And I did shot charts for him. Look him up on Basketball Reference. He had like an 8-game NBA career. Nothing against him, but that was the kind of guys they were bringing in back in the day, back in the early 90s. Then I worked for NBA Entertainment. And so I was in my hometown for a team I worked for and an event for a league where I used to work. And I saw a lot of my old friends. So I think the biggest thing from that was just people going, hey, congratulate. Because they knew I was, you know, from Milwaukee. They knew my dad had worked for the Bucks for a while. And they just come up to me and go, hey, congratulations. You finally got one. Hey, way to go. This is kind of cool, isn't it? I'm like, yeah, I'm having a hard time believing this is happening. So seeing all those people, working with Eric Name and Sam Amick on the final stories and putting that book together, it was just, it didn't hit me that night because I had work to do. But like when I started watching highlights a couple weeks later, it was like, oh my God, this hasn't happened in 50 years. And I was there for it. And I'm very fortunate and lucky. And anybody else who was there for it and anybody else who was in the Deer District that night and anybody else who grew up a Bucks fan in Wisconsin or environs around Wisconsin, that was just one of those things where I don't think they ever saw it happening. And you know what? It could happen again this year. That's the crazy thing, is that it could happen again. This year, they're well positioned to make another finals run. And yes, the Bulls are better. And yes, Brooklyn is where they are. And you'd have to go through Golden State and Phoenix. But you can put them up there with the best teams in the league, and they have a chance.
I know exactly how you feel. For those of you who are on this call, you can see that I just changed my background picture to one of probably the third greatest moment of my life after marriage. And the birth of two sons was being there when the Celtics beat the Lakers in 2008 and almost catching the ball when Glenn Big Baby Davis threw it straight up in the air at the buzzer, took one huge bounce, was coming down right to me. And then Cedric Maxwell, who is visible in that picture just below the camera, his face is obstructed. Max at 6'8", stuck his big mitt out and grabbed the ball and took my first potential NBA rebound away from me, which I actually was on Twitter a few weeks ago. And my friend, Mike Eisenberg, just wrote a book with him. So we were kind of texting. So I said, I hit Max and I said, you see this picture? You're in this picture. And he actually answered me. He's there. Where am I? And I told him and he's there. Oh yeah, I remember that. So I can totally relate. We're still little kids at heart, right? Yep. And Otto, if the Knicks ever win the championship, no matter how old you be, you're going to feel that way too.
maybe my grandkid.
I feel for Knicks fans. I really do. Madison Square Garden is one of the greatest sports venues in the world. Watching a game there when the Knicks are good, it's so exciting. And the fans are totally into it. It would be a thrill. If you're a true basketball fan, it would be a thrill to see the Knicks do something like that, because the atmosphere is just amazing. And I know, Bruce, you're shaking your head because you're a Celtics guy, you got 17. But it's just, it's one of those places where it's different. It's different when they're good.
I respect just, Knicks fans. I do. They're amongst the most knowledgeable of basketball fans. They truly are. But, you know, I have some deep psychological scars going back to the early 1970s regarding that team. They will never heal. Okay. I spoke to Dave Cowens about this. I spoke to John Havlicek, God rest his soul, about this. The 1973 Knicks were a fraudulent champion, Otto. They should not have won that championship. The Celtics were better that year. But anyway, I digress.
Were they 67-15?
68-14. That's 68 right.
68-14, yeah.
Which at the time was the second best record ever after the 72 Lakers, who were 69-13, I believe. So,
yes.
But I'm not bitter, as Daniel Kramer, our producer, would say. You're so bitter. It's like, I'm bitter. I am bitter.
Those sting. Those losses sting. They just and they last.
Otto, am I just being a total jerk about this? Should I let it go?
You should let it go, but you know, hey, you know, fan, you know, first fan fanatic, you know, that's this is where it comes from, right?
So exactly.
That's all good.
Exactly.
All right, I'll let it go, maybe. Nah. Rob Peterson of The Athletic the foremost expert, one of the foremost experts on the Milwaukee Bucks. Thanks so much for joining Otto Strong and myself on Catch and Shoot 2.0. Rob, we love you. You're the best, man. Thanks again.
It was an honor and privilege to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
That was dope.
Man, it's always good to talk. I mean, it's good to talk basketball, but it's good to talk basketball with basketball fans, if you know what I mean. Like I love the energy that you have when you talk about the Celtics. I love the energy that Aaron has when he talks about the Magic, and I love the energy that Rob has when he talks about the Bucks. It's just another level, and so that was special. So one thing we didn't discuss is how far do you think? I mean, you think this team is getting back to the finals?
You know, it's going to be a challenge for them, but now that they've sort of done it and they've decoded how it gets done, they have their big three. They have Giannis, they have Chris Middleton, who, by the way, really showed how valuable he was when he was out with the COVID. That team is so much different with him. He's like the kind of Zen guy on that team. You know, he's the guy that when he's out there, I think everyone else kind of feels like things are going to be all right. I totally see them in Brooklyn in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then who knows? But I see Milwaukee definitely in the Final Four. What about you?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, I don't see, I mean, you know, injuries, knock on wood. I mean, that seems to be the thing that if, you know, if there were no such thing as injuries, I would say that, you know, pencil them into the finals and, you know, take their chances against the Warriors. I'm still kind of feeling like the Warriors will pull it out. But I think if we were rewarded with Warriors Bucks, we would be in for a treat. I mean, that'd be really special.
Warriors, Bucks, Warriors, Nets would also be pretty cool.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
That would be. But you know, I give Milwaukee the edge over Brooklyn probably a little bit because I mentioned only two of their big three in my first part of this comment. I didn't mention Drew Holiday, who's certainly somebody that can compete with James Harden. Giannis and KD is kind of a wash. Chris Middleton, I don't know who his counterpart would be in that mix. They don't have Kyrie. So, yeah, Milwaukee is very dangerous. They know how to do it. And quite honestly, I would be more than happy to see Milwaukee take down Brooklyn and then go on to the finals and play, you know, Golden State or have a rematch. Last year's finals wasn't bad either. So against Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the streaking Milwaukee Bucks. Well, there's another team that is streaking that is definitely not going to the NBA finals, but they are playing well as of late. And that would be the Houston Rockets. Question mark. They've lost 16 straight and now they've won six straight. So what's up with Houston?
They always, one of the cliches that is usually true in basketball is teams generally tell you who they are after about 20 or 25 games. So after 17 games, the Rockets were 1-16 with a 16 game, as you mentioned, losing streak. In the last six games, they're 6-0. Of course, that losing streak is very likely to come to an end really soon. But it kind of tells me like we really don't know who Houston is right now. They're not 1-16 team. They're probably not a 500 team. They got a long way to go from that. And I think you know, in our little discussion before we started, you pointed out that yeah, they might be about to lose six in a row too because they got Brooklyn and Milwaukee for their next two at home. Then they go on the road for three, Memphis, Atlanta, and Cleveland. And who did you say they had after that? Was it the Knicks?
They have the Knicks at home, and then they you know, a more conventional winnable game, you know, Detroit. But still, I mean, yeah, who the heck knows? But yeah, they've got a tough, meaty run through the middle of the month here. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure we're going to be talking about the resurging Rockets at this time. Next time we gather, but you never know, right?
Well, as our producer Daniel Kramer has pointed out, you know, John Wall is still on that team, and again, with all the young guys playing well, you know, do they kind of keep him sidelined and you know let him sit on the bench, or if they think they might actually be getting decent, do they want to put John Wall back in and let him play a little bit? I mean, I have no idea. That's a very odd situation there.
It is. I'm trying to get a sense of still standings wise. You know, I mean, Like, I guess if you're Houston, you want to get to a playing game to give you guys, you know, that experience of doing that. And if that's what you're looking at, you're only three games back in that sense. Wow. And so, you know, can you kind of somehow, you know, leapfrog a San Antonio, a Sacramento, and then either bump out a Portland or Minnesota to get a 9 or 10 spot. I mean, what else? I mean, if you're Houston, what else are you really trying to do this year?
No, I think, you know, they do have some really good young players. And if, again, I'm not a general manager, but they may now be ready to have like some veteran leadership to help those young guys grow, because you don't want to have four young guys in the lineup. I mean, two is okay. That's how, you know, that's going to be your core couple guys moving forward. So, I mean, I don't know. It's I'm not even really sure what their direction's going to be, but it is kind of fun to see a team that was basically left for dead picking itself up a little bit, saying, you know what, we don't suck this bad. We may not be great, but we're not this bad, and playing with some pride. So good for them.
Exactly. Exactly. Well said. Well said.
All right, let's go. Time to stick the landing.
It is time to wrap things up for this week. Aaron Berlin, we hope you're feeling better. We want you back here next week. I don't want your job. I just want to hear you sounding wonderful again and be reunited with your buddy Otto Strong. But thank you to Rob Peterson, my pal, our pal, friend of the show from The Athletic, for joining us, talking about the Bucks. And Rob's passion really does come through. I mean, he is a true blue or a true green Milwaukee Bucks fan. Thank you also to our wonderful producer, Daniel Kramer, and to our editor, Drew Rich. As for the rest of the Pure Hoops media team, this week, the Mike Wise Show has Greg Anthony of Turner Sports. And I got to tell you, that was a really outstanding conversation. It's up there now on the Mike Wise Show queue on in Apple or podcast, Spotify, wherever you get them. He talked not only about his son, Cole Anthony, but he talked about the Kyrie Irving situation, and his take on what's going on there was definitely compelling. It was much more of an interesting take than any that I've heard so far. So I'm putting the big tease on that. It'll also be in our Mike Wise Show Quick Hitter, which will drop Wednesday morning. So if you subscribe to our Quick Hitters, you'll get a notification when that drops. That was fascinating, Greg's take on that. So that's on the Mike Wise Show with Greg Anthony this week. Monica McNutt, King McClure with Buckets, Boards, and Blocks. We'll hear from them hopefully on Thursday. BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman with the Pure Hoops podcast on Friday. And Otto will have his boy Aaron back next week on Catch and Shoot 2.0. Otto.
Yes, and before we leave you, just a final reminder, our big hope for this year is that every person on the planet gets the COVID vaccine and as well their booster, whatever it is here that is up next for you, so we can finally put this pandemic to an end. But of course, we are not there yet. So protect yourself and others by wearing a mask, washing your hands, and maintaining that physical distance. Please don't forget the medical professionals and the other frontline workers who are doing their part to keep us safe. So for my partner this week, Bruce Bernstein, I'm Otto Strong. See you next week.
Catch and Shoot 2.0 is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.